a subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, before you start your committee, I would like to introduce a student who has been job shadowing me today.
Absolutely.
And her name is Alexa Olin. And Alexa is from Newport.
Oh, good.
And she's 14 years of age. And I asked her today if she wanted to be a legislator. And she really wasn't a big yay because her ambition is to be a singer.
Oh,
and so welcome, Alexa. She's here with a number of other students who are job shadowing a number of us today, and we just appreciate that they would take the time out of their schedule to come and learn about this process and to learn how their government works. So welcome, Alexa.
Yes, thank you for coming. Hope you come back again sometime. Okay, we are... Public hearing on Senate Bill 5522, health-related licensing board still, and the state mortuary and cemetery board. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the subcommittee. First item on the agenda today is the mortuary and cemetery board. I delivered to your offices a brief memo and the LFO analysis of the governor's recommended budget. Mortuary and Cemetery Board regulates individuals and establishments involved in the transportation, care, preparation, and processing of dead bodies. The budget is a 5.4% increase over the 9901 estimated expenditures. It essentially maintains current service level. It does propose a reclassification of an investigator position to a compliance manager position to help alleviate turnover in those positions.
Excuse me, sir, what was that called again?
Reclassifying an investigator position to a compliance manager position.
Thank you.
That would, primarily the difference would be to include supervisory responsibilities over the other investigators. The board is 100% other funds collected from fees for examinations, licensure, and miscellaneous fees. There is no fee increase proposed in this budget, which is generally good news. That, I think, is about it for now. We do have with us today Michael Garcia, who is the Secretary Treasurer of the Board. David Coe, who is the Executive Director, and Colleen Kenny from the Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you, Rick. Michael, would you like to proceed?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Hartung and other members of the committee. I'm Michael R. Garcia of Salem, funeral service practitioner and embalmer, and also one of the owners of City View Funeral Home, which is located here in Salem. And this year I was reappointed to a second four-year term with the Mortuary Cemetery Board. And as has been stated, I am the current Secretary Treasurer of the committee. With me today is our Executive Director, David Coe. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity to tell you a little bit about the Mortuary Board. After briefly describing the board's mission, goals, and composition, I will refer to Mr. Coe for continuation of the board's budget presentation. The mission of the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board is to promote, advocate, support professional behavior and standards in all facets of the Oregon death care industry through education, regulation, and the enforcement for the protection of public health, safety, and welfare. The board has basically nine main goals: to assure that the public receives quality services from the death care industry, to protect the public from unprofessional and unethical practices, to assure that only qualified people are licensed in the state of Oregon, to be a state information resource for the public and the industry, to assure that all facilities are licensed and meet state regulations, to assure positive interaction with other organizations, agencies, and groups, to promote consumer awareness, and to encourage the highest level of professionalism within the death care industry, and finally, to promote appropriate legislation. The board is composed of 11 members appointed by the governor. Two are funeral service practitioners, one is an embalmer, three are cemetery representatives, a crematory representative, and four public members. The board has six full-time staff members. One is the executive director, an office manager, three investigators, and a licensing specialist. And again, thank you for the opportunity to come before you, and I'd like to turn this information over to David Koh, our executive director.
Thank you, Michael. David?
Chair Hartung, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Koh. I've been the executive director of the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board since September 1st of 1999. The board is considered a single program unit. It's the board's responsibility to license and regulate the practice of about 2,000 individuals and 750 establishments engaged in the sale of funeral and cemetery goods and services throughout the state. The board's licensees include funeral service practitioners, embalmers, apprentices, pre-need salespeople, funeral establishments, immediate disposition companies, cemeteries, and crematories. The board's principal activities may be divided into three components: licensing and examination, compliance, and administration. There are three major components to the board's compliance program: facility inspection, complaint investigation, and background investigation. The board's current and proposed organization charts are attached as Appendix 1 to the board's written presentation. The board has no major budgetary issues to present this afternoon. As you have heard from Mr. Olson, the governor's recommended budget contains no significant changes from the 1999-2001 legislatively approved budget. However, the board is proposing one minor program enhancement having to do with staff turnover. The board has suffered persistently from an inability to retain experienced investigators. While the most obvious result is a continual investigative backlog and related failure to complete investigative reports in a timely manner, frequent turnover among compliance staff also interferes significantly with the board's overall ability to achieve its goals.
David, could you speak up just a little bit to get on the machine?
Sure.
Thank you.
In an effort to extend the time frame during which compliance staff are retained, the board proposes to establish a compliance unit supervised by a compliance manager. It is expected that this initiative will promote continuity by creating an advancement opportunity for experienced investigators and a career ladder for new investigators. This budget includes additional funding for the reclassification of an existing position from investigator to compliance manager. The board is not requesting any additional FTE. While the budget increase is relatively small, $3,400 a year, establishing a compliance manager position will aid the board greatly in its efforts to retain essential compliance expertise while at the same time enhancing agency organization and focusing compliance responsibility. This issue is addressed in program package number 171, and which appears on budget page number 84. Elements of the board's strategic plan appear on page 2 of the written budget presentation. Although the board has not experienced a major reorganization since 1985, there have been some significant changes in the past 10 years, including the requirement to conduct criminal background checks on pre-need sales applicants beginning in 1993, mandatory complaint investigation beginning in 1997, the addition of one investigator position in 1999, and a complete turnover among the board's staff in the past 4 years. With respect to performance measures, given the limited scope of its activities, the board's ability to directly affect the outcome on any high-level Oregon benchmark is negligible. The board's performance measures are related to the timely resolution of complaints, the timely issuance of licenses, and the extent to which staff receive adequate training. The board also tracks output with respect to inspections, complaint investigations, disciplinary actions, and criminal background investigations. With respect to cost controls, Oregon's combined mortuary and cemetery oversight prevents duplication, cuts costs, and reduces overlapping government regulation of the industry. Unified enforcement and compliance monitoring also enhance consumer protection. While many states continue to regulate funeral and cemetery businesses separately, Increasing integration of these two closely related components of the death care industry has prompted some states, most recently California, to follow Oregon's lead. Beginning in the mid-90s, the board's transition to a biennial renewal cycle continues to help control cost and balance workload without noticeable ill effect. The board's administrative costs are expected to increase about 2% in the coming biennium. Page 4 of the board's written presentation contains a chart comparing administrative costs during the 1999-01 and the 01-03 budget cycles. With regard to information technology, the board's local area network consists of a file server and 6 nearly identical Pentium-based workstations. The board also has 1 laptop computer for field work. In addition to maintaining high-speed access to the state network and the Internet through its own hub, the board shares a mail server hosted by the Board of Nursing. Along with indispensable word processing spreadsheet and task management applications, information technology allows the board to maintain a sophisticated relational database containing current and historic information on more than 3,500 active and archived licensees. This database also generates renewals and sorts information for a variety of reports in the board's directory. The board is currently in the process of expanding the database to include inspection, investigation, and disciplinary action information, which is now maintained separately. In addition to increasing efficiency and improving service delivery, full integration is expected to greatly enhance the board's ability to identify workload trends and measure performance. Recent computer interfaces with other agencies have simplified important aspects of the board's licensing and criminal background check activities. The benefits of obtaining remote access to the corporation's division's database and the law enforcement data system are described on page 5 of the board's written budget presentation. The board's current computer system was installed in March of 1999. The board is not requesting any additional funding to upgrade its information technology system. The board is currently one of 10 licensing agencies that obtain in-house systems support and maintenance through an interagency agreement with the Board of Nursing. After years of frustration in obtaining reliable, low-cost information system support, the board is pleased to be a party to this agreement. The board also has a separate database management and development contract. Although the board, with respect to budget-related policy legislation, although the board is not proposing any such legislation, members of the Joint Legislative Audits Committee have agreed to sponsor a measure designed to enhance consumer protection and strengthen oversight of the prearranged funeral and cemetery trust program. The anticipated trust program bill is expected to require renewal for a fee of the pre-need sales certificates currently issued by the board. If passed, the board will establish a minimal renewal fee, but the fee will not have any significant impact on the board's revenues. With respect to affirmative action, among the board's staff are 2 white females, 2 white males, a Native American female, and an African American male.
Is that it? Mm-hmm. I like your report. The thing I like about most of all, you're not asking for an upgrade on your computer system. I think every small board so far has requested that. And so we will proceed with Colleen.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Colleen Kinney, Department of Administrative Services. And I'll be following this handout that Rick passed out previously.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
those of us who are aging and not able to hear would all of you speak up a little bit. I have people here.
Certainly. This is a presentation for the governor's recommended budget for the board, for the mortuary and cemetery board. Page 2 shows that the governor's recommended budget is $989,286 other funds, which is a 5.9% increase over the 1999-2001 legislatively approved budget, and a 0.7% increase over the current service level. Positions remain static at 6 full-time equivalent. Page 3 shows that the board is funded entirely with other funds, supported by fees paid for business licenses, fees, and penalties. Page 4 just reiterates what Mr. Olson and Mr. Coe said was in the governor's recommended budget. It's a 5.9% increase from the 1999-2001 legislatively approved budget. It continues current programs and services and reclassifies one investigator position. Page 5 shows that the board consists of one program unit covering licensing, examination, compliance, administration, and education. Page six shows the breakout between personal services, which make up 33% of the agency's budget, and about 67% are in services and supplies. On page 7, this shows how we developed the governor's recommended budget. First, we included any emergency boards through April 2000. The board was included in the statewide salary adjustment. Also, standard position and inflationary changes were made to the current service level budget. We also eliminated one-time expenditures for systems furniture and included adjustments for standard statewide government service charges. The board's only policy package is number 171, which is the reclassification of one position from investigator 2 to a compliance manager, and this was approved by the Department of Administrative Services Human Resources Services Division. This fits in well with the board's overall goals to reduce its investigative backlog and retain its employees. Finally, on page 8, this shows the revenues projected in 2001-03 are sufficient to meet the board's needs. The board will most likely need a fee increase in 2003-05. This was last done in 1993. Finally, there is a technical adjustment, like other health-related licensing boards that you've heard previously, to correct an error in allocating the risk management charges. This is $861, bringing the total revised budget to $990,147 other funds.
Thank you, Colleen. Michael or David, do you wish to make any further statements or anything more to add? Okay, we'll open to questions. Members? Yes. Representative.
And Mike lives in my, he's one of my constituents in City Views in my district. So just
that's okay.
For the record.
We'll still treat it.
A question. You mentioned that your need for reclassification of the position has to do with turnover in order to get it to backlog. What is your turnover rate?
Chair Hartung, Representative Winters, as indicated in the written presentation, we've lost 4 investigators from then 2 positions between 95 and 99. We also had a contract investigator for a period. We no longer have a contract investigator, but that contract investigator also declined to renew his contract. I believe it was in June of 99. So it's we only had 2 positions then. The legislature approved a 3rd position during the last session. So we have 3 now.
Follow up. You have 3 lead investigators, investigator 2.
We have 3 investigators, yes.
Are all 3 of them investigators 2?
Yes.
And so I'm trying to get at how changing the reclassification of 1 is going to solve your problem of investigator turnover.
We don't have any naive hopes that this change is going to motivate an individual to stay with the board for a lifetime. What we hope to achieve is the extension of the period during which individuals will remain employed with the board. Because investigators, since the scope of the industry's practices and the unique scope of the regulatory scheme is unusual, there is no pool of qualified investigators out there to call upon when a vacancy occurs. We can find people who are qualified investigators, but that aspect of it that has to do with death and dying and the death care industry is not there. So of necessity, we've got to invest a substantial amount of time bringing new investigators up to speed. And while they become moderately competent after a year, really, as far as obtaining proficiency, that doesn't happen for 2 or even 3 years. So that when we lose someone who's only been with the board for a year, 2 or 3, we've lost a substantial investment, and we go back to scratch taking productive people.
If I can put it in perspective, that you're trying to build a career ladder.
We are indeed.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? Yes, Senator Trow.
Well, reclassifying the one position gets you a higher paid investigator, is that what you're saying?
We will have a compliance manager, someone who, excuse me, Senator Hartung, Senator Trow, we will have a manager, we'll obtain additional advantages. It won't simply be a higher paid investigator. It will
he'll
help us.
He'll do some other things that you're going to, there'll be a job description for a compliance manager. Well, that's different from an investigator.
Yes, although the compliance manager will continue to carry a complex caseload.
Of investigation.
Right.
Okay. Why are we not able to pay investigators enough? Is that why there's such a turnover?
I think that's part of the reason, yes.
And people go on to higher paying jobs after they...
Well, and they, yes, they do. And we're run, you know, you reach the top of your of the ladder in terms of the step increases and so on, and then people are looking to move onward.
Investigators are a classified position, therefore you can only pay so much, is that it?
That's true.
I wonder if we've just looked at that then. Is that true for other agencies, or is it just true for yours, you think?
I don't have sufficient information to answer that question. I do know that this position, as it's classified, was recently examined. So I believe the classification is correct. Those positions were recently audited, so I think the Investigator 2 positions are properly classified.
I wonder if staff could at least look in to see if other agencies are having the same problem with keeping investigators. We're not paying them enough. I don't know.
That plus the career ladder issue. Because if I'm seeing where you're trying to go, excuse me, Mr. Chair,
yeah,
is that you're trying to create a career ladder and you have a very small staffing base. And so if I think that's, I don't want to put words in your mouth. But
Chair Hartung, Representative Winters, that's correct. Under this scheme, as far as the career ladder is concerned, someone who entered employment as a licensing specialist might, over time, obtain qualifications to become an investigator. The investigator then has an opportunity to advance over time to the compliance manager position. There's a number of other advantages having to do with the way we organize our work, with the way we can focus responsibility. Currently, I can't make assignments to an individual among the investigators because it would be an out-of-class assignment if I were to give them responsibilities for supervising any of the others or assigning work and that sort of thing. In addition to that, should anything happen to me, or the board would have a natural sort of proving ground so that there is staff available being trained to move even further up into the executive director's position. And obviously having that sort of background with the board is quite an advantage when it comes to the board's decisions about who should be selected as the next executive director.
Excuse me, I have a question of Ms. Kinney. Given his comment on the inflexibility that he has with positions, do we no longer have that catch all little phrase as assigned by?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I have a copy of both job descriptions. If you'd like, I can share that with you. I'm not sure if that language is in there.
But if it is not, have we, why not? Because I think this poses not only a problem for him, but for other agencies, that it, that the position is so restrictive that you have no movement.
Chair Hartung, Representative Winters, the supervisory duties may be assigned within the range of the duties that apply to the Investigator 2 classification. We're talking about duties that have to do with management and supervision, and of course you're crossing a union threshold once you start assigning. These are represented positions, but to assign supervisory responsibility to a represented position that isn't so classified, obviously, gets us in a certain amount of Dutch.
So we're dealing with a union issue, is that what you're
saying? Well, it hasn't been a union issue because I've been careful not to overstep the appropriate bounds.
Thank you, Representative Winters. I had the same question. And Rick, when you're checking on what we just told you about the pay, I'd be very curious to see what kind of flexibility we have for the small boards without interfering with the union. Of course, we'd want the person who maybe has his scope of work enlarged to be qualified, but it seems to me the small boards particularly need some flexibility. That sounds to me like we don't have any other questions or comments.
Chair Hartung, I did one more comment. There is one avenue that we have attempted to employ on a temporary basis, and that has to do with lead work. So that to a degree, an investigator too can perform certain less than supervisory functions with respect to other investigators. In this case, we had one experienced investigator and two brand new people, and we needed that expertise to be used to train the two new people, and it seemed only fair at that point to reward that effort, that additional effort, with a lead work situation. But it's only a temporary stopgap measure, and it doesn't allow the administrator to assign true supervisory responsibility.
Okay, thank you. Other comments, questions? Yes, Representative Schrader, and then Close.
Two questions, really. One is with regard to the performance measures. We've become sensitive to the fact that it is difficult for the small boards to link up to some of the benchmarks, but you identified a few things you're tracking, and to the extent that you indicate some targets are 80%, but if you could supply us with a little information, a graph or something showing last few years and where you've been, how close you are to those targets. Maybe I missed it. I didn't see it in the information.
Chair Hartung, Representative Schrader, in the written presentation by the board, beginning on page 7, I believe, actually, page 8, with respect to measure 1, the board has, these are, the first two of these performance measures have been recently established, particularly to address some concerns that we have about a lack of performance. The goal on the first measure, which has to do with the percentage of investigative reports submitted to the board within 120 days, is 80%. Among complaints logged in the 97-99 biennium, only about 28% of investigative reports reached the board within 120 days. To date, in the 99-01 biennium, only about 16% of reports are reaching the board within 120 days. And this has to do with complaints filed by any person, which relates back to some requirements that came into play in 1997, I believe, with the passage of Senate Bill 235. Performance measure number 2 involves the percentage of complaints resolved within 6 months. This was a second one that was established to address a pressing need. We established a high goal at 75%. Among the complaints logged in the 97-99 biennium, about 29% were resolved within 6 months. To date, in the 99-01 biennium, only about 27% have been resolved within 6 months.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
That's helpful. Thank you. We didn't get that far, I guess, in the presentation. But what would help, I think, in the future, the legislature's going for the citizens with the performance measures is that, you know, you should hopefully set some intermediate goals. You're not going to reach 75% in one biennium, but to the extent that you go from 20, your goal would be with the budget you get this cycle and the way you allocate the resources and the new compliance manager, we hope to get to 30% resolved in 6 months by the next biennium, and then we can kind of chart that, you and your members can chart that and feel good about what's going on. But if you can't get there, then it also adds credence to the fact that we need that fee increase. Those four investigators, even with the compliance manager, we tried that idea, you guys, and it's not quite working, so therefore, that's the type of logic and format and presentation that would, I think, help us and hopefully help you guys, too.
Thank you. Representative Close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On budget page 37 and 38, you've got a couple pie graphs, and I just have two questions. I noticed that your salary rate is down from the past biennium from 49.9% to 48.2%, and I wondered why that was, and also interagency charges are up 2.4%, and I wondered what that referred to.
I think Chair Hartung, Representative Close, I believe the percentage is down because the overall is larger. So as a percentage of the total, it is less, but it's probably, it's more dollars than it would have been otherwise. Salaries in the 2001-2003 are at 473,000, and in even though the percentage is less in the previous biennium, the total is 466,000. So it's lower as a percentage, but it's actually gone up. So there isn't any real disparate impact there. And then the other question had to do with the
interagency charges.
Interagency charges, principally, the differences have to do with government service charges and interagency charges. While government service charges actually went down, the interagency charges went up as the result of an increase in the amount the board is going to pay the health division for the fiscal services that we obtain through the health division. By fiscal services, I mean cashiering, mailroom services, accounts receivable, accounts payable. There is a health division staffer who serves as our ABIS coordinator and as our automated budget information systems coordinator and our PICS personnel coordinator. They also handle entry of information in the state's financial management system, and they provide service with respect to providing internal controls that the board could not otherwise provide because we're simply too small to have those kinds of internal controls. But that's where the increase comes from.
Thank you.
Senator Trow?
A few years ago, we had some kind of very unhappy occurrences in the mortuary business. I think we all perhaps remember those. And so I think that the legislature then beefed up your regulatory activities, changed the law a little bit and told you to do more in terms of regulating the industry. Are most all the mortuary facilities licensed and meeting standards as far as you can tell with your investigations?
Senator Hartung, Senator Trow, yes, they are all licensed as far as we know. If there's one out there that's not licensed, I'm sure we would be on that right away. And we perform regular inspections. We have a rigorous inspection process with a checklist. Investigators travel across the state about 1,000 miles.
Do they get to every mortuary every year?
I believe our statutory requirement is once every biennium, but we try to get there more often than not. And more often than that. So I wouldn't say it's every year, but for many, it's every year. And certainly if we become aware of problems, then it may increase.
Okay. You get claims from people claiming unprofessional or unethical practices, and you investigate those? Is that what happens?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And what's the condition of the industry generally? Do you find it's pretty free of lack of ethics and unprofessional practices, or are there some?
Well, like any other industry, you know, we have some that are terrific and some that are not so terrific. Overall, I would say the industry is doing very well. The Federal Trade Commission recently conducted a sweep of 22 funeral homes in the city of Portland, and the regional administrator said that compliance among Portland funeral homes with the funeral rule was very high. There was one incident, or one. They do test shops where they sweep through an area. There was one situation involving a non-licensee. So this was a person who was not a funeral director or embalmer, who made some misrepresentations, as I recall, and that matter has been referred to the board for further investigation. With our own process, our emphasis has been on corrective action, not disciplinary action, where inspection issues are concerned. We provide detailed lists of things that we find that are out of compliance. We negotiate a time frame for corrective action. We ask the licensee to supply us with a signed statement saying that the deficiencies have been corrected, and all of that information goes into an inspection file. The next time we go out to inspect, the first thing the investigator looks at is the previous inspection checklist, and we will go out and confirm whether or not, in fact, those deficiencies have been corrected. It's a very complex set of rules and regulations, and so it's very rare to conduct an inspection when you don't find some deficiency. The issue is whether or not the licensee is making a sincere effort to correct any deficiency. If we find continuing violations, those are the kinds of things we bring to the board for their decision as to what might be warranted under those circumstances.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yes. Representative Winters.
Thank you. There was a recent story in the Oregonian, I believe it was, that talked about retaining the remains of individuals from our institutions. And it, as I understand it, that the remains are kept indefinitely. Is that correct? And will that pose sometime in the future some kind of storage problem, even though they're in cardboard boxes?
I guess I might address that, because that story was in the Oregonian on Sunday, and we had reporters from the Oregonian that came in and talked to us about it. We serve as a contract funeral home for a couple of the state institutions, and what we do is, it is called a service for these individuals who have cremation, and then it's a permanent storage fee of $300, and it's part of the contract that we have with these institutions for holding them indefinitely or until someone in a family claims them and wants to do otherwise, Representative Winters.
So, follow-up, so if no one has a family or no one claims the remains, then you're the keeper of those remains forever?
That's correct.
This is after cremation, just the
this is after cremation.
This is after cremation, yes.
Okay. Further questions, comments?
One more, sir?
Certainly.
Representative Schrader. Following up on Senator Trow's comments, with in light of the Pearl Group Kern situation and a concern that a lot of this business has been gathered in the hands of a few corporate entities, were there any changes suggested to how we do things in Oregon to kind of prevent this sort of problem from occurring again, at least as far as its after effects?
Senator Hartung, Representative Schrader, you're referring to the matter involving Kern Family Services, in which a total of about $6.3 million in trust funds came up missing. First of all, I'm happy to report that we have there has been a global settlement in which those people who purchased their funeral and cemetery goods and services in advance will be protected. We've recovered most of that money, and there's a backup funding mechanism to ensure that no one suffers a loss. During the interim, the board established a pre-need task force to take a look at the oversight responsibilities. That task force achieved consensus in coming up with a legislative concept intended to enhance consumer protection and change oversight. As I understand it, there is a legislative concept being developed. I don't think it's come out as a bill yet. At least if it has, I haven't seen it. But I have every reason to believe that there will be a bill this session designed to enhance consumer protection in this pre-need arena.
Other questions, comments? Do you have anything else, Rick, on that one? Okay. So we will close the public hearing on the mortuary and cemetery board and open the public hearing on Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Booth.
We have before us now the budget for the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The board is responsible for regulating veterinary medical practices, including the licensing of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, interns, and animal euthanasia technicians and shelters. The budget, the governor's recommended budget is a 4% increase over the 99.01 estimated expenditures and 2.3% over current service level. The board is funded 100% by other funds from the collection of fees for examination, licenses, and other miscellaneous fees. During the last legislative session, during the budget hearings, the board was instructed to review their fees because of a very high ending balance. We still have that problem. It's still a high ending balance. And in discussing this with the board and with DAS, the board is coming back and proposing that they reduce fees during the 01-03 biennium temporarily.
Can I carry this board to the floor?
No, I want to.
And I believe that the board will address this. Just to let you know what their intent is now, it's to waive veterinary technician exam and license fees, euthanasia technician and agency fees, and miscellaneous fees, and reduce the annual veterinary license renewal by 50% during 01-03, and then at the beginning of 03, return the fees to their current level. So even with that fee reduction, they'll still end up with approximately an 8-month ending balance. So, and looking at their cash flow, at a low point, it would be a little bit lower than that. So that's within the guidelines that have been established. This budget does continue at current service level. There is one policy option package that reclassifies an investigator position to a compliance manager. That's not right. Excuse me. I'm looking at the wrong one.
Yeah.
Looking at the wrong one. That's an error in my memo to you. The board is also requesting another fund limitation increase, the 1999-01 biennium, the current biennium that we are in. This is due to the extraordinary amount of money that they have spent for attorney general fees. Due in particularly to one individual and one case. This case in particular, the Attorney General billings for 99-01 have already totaled in excess of $50,000.
What?
And is projected to increase to approximately $65,000. The board will be addressing this issue during their presentation. So that has exceeded the line item limitation for Attorney General significantly. As part of that request, during the 99-01 budget process, the board was approved, had a policy package that was approved to allow them to use the Attorney General for 40 hours to do an extensive administrative rule review. Because of these attorney general costs, the monies that were set aside for that have gone to pay the attorney general bills. We have not done that yet.
I think it's cheaper to have an attorney on their staff.
That item was again brought forward in this budget as another policy package. Upon consultation with the agency and DAS, and upon my recommendation, they are including that as part of this request to increase the expenditure limitation, the current biennium, to get that done this biennium for a couple of reasons. One, it was approved in the budget, but two, attorney general fees are going to go up next biennium, and it can be done cheaper this current biennium, and the attorney general has indicated that they do have time to do that and complete that this biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dutrow.
I wish Senator Miller had was here, but we just worked the attorney general's budget, and we did have a significant reduction in the fees that they will be charging, and I don't know if staff knows what that level is yet.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dutrow, I don't know exactly what that level is, but I do believe it is still a small increase over what they're charging this biennium.
Yeah, it could be.
Rick, also, is there an increase for the panel, hearing panel, in this budget? I noticed it was one in the other budget.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winters, I don't think that there is. But again, the agency can confirm that during their presentation.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, yes, Senator Dutrow.
Are their rates abnormally high? Why have they been carrying such a large ending balance? Must be something they've been carrying for quite a while.
Chair Hartung, Senator Dutrow, it is something that they've been carrying for quite a while, and that's why the issue came up during the last session as well. They
are their fees excessively high? What's the problem?
Perhaps I could ask Representative Schrader.
Damn right. No, I don't think they're excessively high. Actually, if people are applying from out of state, I think that our fees are lower compared to some other states. But I'm sure, I'd like them to address that.
Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, let's proceed. Dr. Betts.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Betts. I'm a veterinarian from Woodburn. I've been on the Board of Examiners for about 2.5 years now. I've been asked to give you an overview of the Veterinary Board of Examiners. First, I'd like to read our mission statement to you. The mission of the Veterinary Board is to ensure quality veterinary service in Oregon by testing, licensing, and regulating the veterinary profession, which includes veterinarians, veterinary technicians, and euthanasia shelters and technicians. The board's goal includes continuing to define and refine and monitor the rules governing standard and alternative veterinary practices and to provide prompt and responsive service to private and public customers. Our main goal is to protect the public and make sure that when they walk into a veterinary clinic that they're going to be seeing somebody that is scrutinized by their peers. Our agency is made up, our board is made up of 5 veterinarians that are appointed by the board, by the governor, and approved by a Senate committee, I believe, if I remember correctly, and 2 lay people. We have 2 outstanding lay people on the board right now, and we actually have a very good board right now, as far as I'm concerned. Board ensures that the veterinary practitioners have met legislatively and professionally established requirements for licensure and practice and continue to practice, and they do. And we do this in 3 ways. We review and approve license applications. We conduct the national board exams and assess education and skills, as well as tests on the state veterinary laws, and by investigating and adjudicating complaints by the public. All licenses are renewed annually. Our annual license fee is $100. Speaking for myself personally, I don't know if I should do this now, but $100 is really not an excessive fee in this day and age for a veterinarian to practice veterinary medicine. We're required to do 30 hours of continuing education every 2 years. We have to report that every 2 years on our license application, what we did, when we did it, so forth and so on. The board is located in the Portland State Office Building. Our strategic plan includes keeping a modern-day website. On this modern-day website, people can go and look up the requirements to get a license. They can also, the public can go and look up how to file a complaint if they wish to file a complaint. continuing with the strategic plan, we review and adopt rules governing license and foreign graduates consistent with international trade agreements, and which enable highly qualified foreign graduates to enter the workforce and get a license as a veterinarian in the state of Oregon. We review and clarify the Veterinary Practice Act, which governs us, and is our sole guiding light. We continue to monitor the impact on the public as far as corporate veterinary practices, and we reduce the. It is our goal to reduce the statewide shortage of veterinary technologists, which are licensed people, by amending rules and trying to approve qualified applicants' opportunities to become licensed in the state of Oregon. We have not raised our fees since 1993-95. At that time, we raised fees because of a contested case that was cost $90,000 in attorney fees. At this point, I would like to turn the conversation over to our executive director, Lori Mackinen, who is here to give the rest of the stuff.
Lori, welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. First, please forgive my voice. I'm getting over something not so quickly.
It floats in this building.
Yeah. Excuse me.
It floats around in this building.
Oh, it floats around in our building.
Yes.
For performance and workload measures, we have basically two areas, and one is licensing. And we measure the performance by tracking the number of licensees and complaints. The number of licensees has only increased a little bit in the last biennium. We have 1,600 veterinarians, 600 veterinary technicians, 32 euthanasia shelters, and 124 euthanasia technicians in the state. The addition of an investigator in the 9901 biennium made it a little easier for us to track complaints, and it also freed up the other administrative staff, which is me and a 0.75 FTE office space to do whatever it is we do. As far as complaints, we get about 10 to a dozen complaints a month, and this is maybe slightly less or the same as we have been getting in previous biennia. The addition of this investigator has made it easier for us to mediate complaints. In other words, where the complaint isn't particularly jurisdictional, it's an issue that the board doesn't have authority over, then the investigator can spend time working it out on the phone with the complainant, and hopefully that complainant goes away with a sense that, you know, if it hasn't been at least resolved as far as the fee issues that are usually the basis of the complaint, at least they feel that they've had some time to talk to the board or a representative of the board. And the board has, in this last biennia, begun to look more at requiring ameliorative things of licensees, such as continuing education or specific targeted education to address deficiencies, rather than issuing discipline, which goes on the licensee's record for life and isn't necessarily the best way to deal with some of the complaints and issues that we get. Excuse me. The next category is cost control and coordination with other agencies. Like you've heard from all of the other health-related licensing boards, we share resources. We're co-located with seven other boards in a small area, and we also share the network with the nursing board and the pharmacy board and the mortuary board. We have a contract with a database manager, and that database is shared. Previously, seven of us shared it. We upgraded a little bit in the last biennia, so that right now the veterinary board shares its database server with the occupational therapy board. I might add, we also share one staff position with that board, and that's the office specialist. If it's agreeable to everybody, I'd like to talk about the Attorney General issue, because that's kind of next on my sheet, and the topic did come up. Mm-hmm. As Rick pointed out, we have overexpended the budget by $25,000, and that was all due to discipline and a contested case hearing and an appeal by one licensee. And this particular licensee has been on the board's radar screen pretty much since, well, officially since about 1997. And the case that was heard, the contested case hearing that was heard in this biennial was the result of some activity that took place in 1997. The board felt that because of the nature of this licensee's violations and because of the reaction from veterinarians, colleagues of this veterinarian, as well as the public, we had quite a few complaints. The board felt it was essential to take action, and this, as it happened, this particular licensee is fractious and has an attorney who files motions and petitions and appeals, and while none of them have any particular merit, in fact, one was just heard in the Court of Appeals on Monday, and I haven't heard the outcome of that, but I understand they're laughing over it. The board is required to respond to every piece of paper that this attorney files, and the board is about to issue a final order for the most recent contested case hearing, which we fully expect will be appealed also. Anybody have any questions about how
is that practitioner still practicing veterinary medicine?
Yes and no, Mr. Chair, members. The board has issued a proposed order to permanently revoke this licensee's license. And I think that we're having a telemeeting on Thursday, and I expect that the board will vote to adopt a final order revoking the licensee's license. However, the licensee has continued to practice even while suspended and while her license was not valid. So technically, she should not be practicing. In real life, I think she is.
What kind of practice does she have? A small animal?
It's a large animal, primarily equine reproductive services.
Representative Schrader?
I'm very biased, and you have to declare my conflict of interest, if you will, on this particular board. I'm a practicing veterinarian, part-time at least right now. But the board does do a very good job, and it's the infamous Heidi case where they've been working on this for a lot of time, a lot of years, and it's a shame. I guess the question I'd have for them, you know, people can flaunt the law there regardless, but if there's something they need from us or from the legislature to help them terminate these cases in a more expeditious manner, any sort of, like we heard from the other mortuary board, they were doing some things because of the problems they had. There's some way we can help the board in any fashion as you go through this and your attorney gives you advice, I think this body would be more than happy to help. It's not fair that the rest of veterinarians have to pay for that, although I'm pleased to do it in some respects as I profession, and I think it's something we all like to see done correctly, and the malfactors that give every profession a bad name should be dealt with as expeditiously and severely as possible. So to the extent that we can help,
Mr. Chair, Dr. Schrader, the problem that we ran up against was this thing called due process, and the licensee in this case understands the system and has taken advantage of every opportunity that is available. And so even though it seems like it's dragged out for a long time, I think we lost one board member over this issue, and he is in her part of the state and just got pretty frustrated with it. It seems that it has taken a long time. It's been as expeditious as it is possible for it to have been. The delays have primarily been issues where the licensee has a certain number of days to respond and takes advantage of it, asks for requests, extensions, and postponements, and this, and then. The other part of the problem is, as time has gone on, it's become such a complex issue that we're not just dealing with one particular complaint or one contested issue. It's snowballed. And so in the last contested case hearing, there were seven separate legal issues, and they had to be dealt with not just by our, the board's attorney, but also by the appeals court, and there was a civil case filed in Deschutes County. So, in fact, I have been subpoenaed to testify at a, Deschutes County is prosecuting this licensee, and I'll be testifying as to the board's opinion of whether she should be practicing.
Senator Stroll?
Your attorney general's fees, then, were not adequate to help you handle this situation. How did you supplement them some way, those fees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stroll, we, in the last biennium, perhaps Dr. Schrader remembers this, we didn't spend money on pretty much anything else except attorney's fees. I reduced my office assistant to 0.5. I talked one of the other boards into picking up my copying fees for the last 6 months of the biennium, which was really great. Thanks, Barbara, if you're watching. And we had an investigator resign, and I didn't fill that position until August of 2000. So the money, and I think what your question is, did we have adequate funds? No. We were, the funding that we had, we thought would cover two hearings. Traditionally, $10,000 a hearing ought to be enough for a board.
Well, I would think rather than having to do those things and really cut down on your regulation of the rest of the profession by reducing your investigator, since you have a large ending balance, you could have come to the e-board and asked for some expenditure authority to spend some of your ending balance.
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, I did ask to do that, and it was not, at the time it was felt that I had an adequate amount of money, and if I scrimped, I would be okay until the end of the biennium, so.
Well, it seems to me that you must have curtailed some of the operations of your office to do that, and I don't think that's good for the profession to do it that way.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trout, Dr. Betts can tell you how unhappy he was when I didn't pay the board.
In your budget this time, you're going to have ample attorney general fees again. Are you asking for them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, we have asked for just about the same amount.
Does it look like this case is about over or not?
It's really hard to say. As long as this licensee has any money to pay a lawyer, the case is going to go on.
Dr. West, tell me a little bit about the practice. I'm not a practicing veterinarian, but I've paid veterinarians for the last 4 years. I have Arabian horses, and I'm really curious about how a person could get away with it, apparently is, and still she is. And what is the nature of the violation of the practice? Is it endangering the health or welfare of people?
Mr. Chairman, it's just a general case of gross incompetence and negligence. If you want to come right down to it, how the individual practices, what she uses to practice with or what she doesn't use to practice with, it's no more than just a case of just negligence.
Well, it seems to me then that, as Representative Schrader suggested, this legislature ought to do something, in terms of changing policy that allows a person to be removed from their practice if they're that incompetent. Don't you think? Or what do you think? What should we do? This is ridiculous for you to have to spend $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 just because you can't remove a person. An incompetent person in their practice.
The problem is you're, Mr. Chairman, is we're treading in the due process area. If somebody files a complaint against me, John Betts, I want to have my day in court, be able to explain my side if I think I'm right. And some people know the system, and some people know how to beat the system. At this point in time, I don't know if I should speak to this, but where we were talking about coming before the e-board to ask for money, it was in the middle of the Rite Aid thing. Does everybody remember the Rite Aid thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody was, we didn't want to have to go to the e-burger. And the whole Rite Aid thing, if you want to get right down to it, was somebody knew how, somebody with a lot of money knew how to beat the system, from my understanding of it.
That's true. Well, you know, this is not a critical comment about the AG's office, but in a situation like this, should you find an attorney that's, you know, outside the AG's office that is an expert that would be, you know, comparable to the person that you're trying to remove from their practice?
Are you suggesting privatizing the attorney for the board?
I'm just suggesting what some opportunities might be or to continue to pay the Attorney General's office what I hear you say probably end up $65,000 just to set a representative.
I just thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to just follow up on that comment. Sometimes, and I know from the business perspective, that I select attorneys who have a skill in a particular area, and particularly when you're talking sometimes with the court, that if I'm going to deal with Multnomah County, I try to get me someone that's within that county because of their relationships inside of the court system. And I think that all of us, when you're dealing with the court system, you look at what you can get to win, and I think this is what you're saying, and it may be that sometimes it's better to go private than to stay within the AG system. I don't know, and I'm not going to elaborate, but...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winters, part of the problem, we have an attorney from the AG's office right now that I think the board is generally pretty happy with. We've been satisfied. She's been on board for about 6 months. But I've been on the board for 2.5 years, and we're on our fourth attorney general in 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. So it's a continuation thing. They come in and they got to get into the middle of it, and they have to review all of the papers that have been already presented at the sure. hearings and so forth and so on. And so I don't know if we're being charged double time because they have to go back and review the hearings. They're coming in on the board as a new attorney. But if they are, there's some expense that I don't know if it's necessary.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee you, you're being charged for whatever time, whatever attorney general spends on, you know, getting up to speed with where you are, but that's probably something for another committee. And Senator Cho, you're on Senator Miller's sub.
One of the things we found, though, was in that committee was that generally the level, I think, of service to state agencies is generally reported as very good. At the Attorney General's office, everybody, you know, chafes at the fees, but those fees hire some pretty good attorneys.
Yeah, well, I'm not questioning the quality of the attorneys necessarily, but the fact, as Dr. Betts said, they brought in four different ones, and that they have to get up to speed with it. That's expensive.
Mr. Chair, I raised that issue of their attorneys having to get up to speed because that's not only, it's not unique to this board, it's
no.
others. And I suggested to the Attorney General's office that they may want to have a call it training or whatever, but a fee where you're not, as a board, getting full service, but yet you're paying full rate. The rate is whether or not you're a novice or whether or not your experience is the same, and I suggested that they may want to have a look at that because the small boards really don't have the dollars within their budget, and the impact to the small boards are tremendous. And I did ask them to take a consideration and look at those kinds of issues. We've had another board that came before us that their bill was high because the new attorney had to get up to speed.
Exactly. Well, this is not the time to change that exactly. Senator Crow, did you have another comment? Okay.
The tool saw that problem.
Yeah. Lori, did you have any other thing to say on your part of the presentation?
Oh, Mr. Chair and members, I do have a couple more things. Basically,
certainly, go ahead.
Our information technology is moving right along. We have a website up, and I'll discuss this a little later. I am asking for increased limitation to replace the investigator's computer, which is about 7 or 8 years old. And it doesn't have the memory capacity to deal with the improvements that we're making to the complaint database. And then also, as far as any budget-related policy legislation, the passage of House Bill 2504 may have an impact. This is the Central Hearings Panel. That may have an impact.
Just a little bit louder, please, Lori.
Sorry. May have an impact on our budget. But as far as that goes, I need to say that we have two hearings pending that were requested in 1998. Those procedures will not be subject to the hearing officer panel, which is partly why we didn't ask for any more limitation to cover that. So if we're doing one hearing a year, we won't be looking at using the hearing officer panel at least into the next biennium. Our affirmative action policy is our hiring requirements and all that are in accord with affirmative action requirements. And that's all I have written down.
Okay, we'll get back to you. Yes, Senator Shaw?
Proposed reduction in some of your examination fees and so forth that will maybe reduce your ending balance a little bit. Are those going to cause you any problems?
Mr. Chair, Senator Turow, I have, if I could give you a little, could I give a little pie chart to everybody?
Sure.
The chart is it's at the end of what you're being given. It's the one with all the pretty colors. The proposed reductions will reduce our cash balance by about 45% and leave us about $152,000. And I think, as Rick said earlier, that's about 8 months operating. And as far as whether it will present a problem, hard to say.
Do you have any cash flow problems? So money comes in at certain times and goes out at certain times. Do you ever run out of money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Turow, we have not run out of money in the two biennia that I've been here, but in the 93-95 biennium, prior to that, there was another issue with the licensee, and the board went into the red on it and had to raise their fees 50%. But I think to get back to an earlier question that you had about why we have so much money, when I took the job in 97, I was somewhat paranoid about spending any money because we had these disciplinary issues pending. And so I was very stingy. I didn't spend any money other than what had to be spent on AG issues and stuff. And so it did kind of accumulate. And I also was kind of anticipating that we would have trouble. The licensee that we're dealing with now is not even the worst case that we have before us. We have two cases that are probably both of these cases are being represented by the attorney who is also a veterinarian who kind of broke the board back in before the 93 biennium. The board, in a somewhat ill-advised way, went up against this person for an advertising issue, and you know, we lost a bunch of money. So his two hearings are pending with us. So I'm a little nervous about reducing our cash too much, lest we need it.
Well, I would encourage you next time, you know, if you have all of these attorney general fees and they're beyond your budget, that you try to economize, maybe use some of your services and supplies, but I would think that you still have the obligation to continue to do your investigations and to be a working board and do things. And so if you run short and you've got an ending balance, you come and ask for some more expenditure so you can do what you need to do.
Ms. Rick, do you have a comment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Turow. I do need to point out that these fees that would be reduced via administrative rule. And if they find that they're beginning to, or looks like projections are running, that they would run low on cash, they could increase those fees back up to where they are now. Again, it's done by administrative rule, and they would be able to do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Trill.
There was one other thing. You had, last session, I think, indicated that you wanted money to revise your administrative rules or to study them anyway to get ready to do that. We still have that need?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, we still have that need. The rules haven't been reviewed or for legal sufficiency in, not in my memory, and I don't believe they were reviewed during the 9 years that the previous...
Do those rules get you in trouble, and are they causing the suits?
No, they're not causing the suits, but they could be tightened to make it easier for the board to argue its position, and that's what...
Are you asking for money to do that this time?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that's in your budget? There's ample money to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, actually what we're doing, that was an approved package in the 9901 budget. And so in their request to come back for increased limitation in the current biennium, I suggested that they increase that limitation, that request enough, do that rule review in this biennium, and we won't include it in the next biennium's budget.
Okay. So it can be done now?
Yes.
Are you doing it now?
I will, starting tomorrow.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make a comment.
Sure.
Before we adjourn, and I want to commend you for your efficient way of operating this board. And when I looked at your budget and I looked at what you've done and looked at the fact that one, you're looking at ways to be economical, I don't want you to think that that's any way negative, because I really appreciate your doing that. And I, as one person, commend you very much.
Thank you very much.
Representative Schrader?
Two comments on that. Another issue for the committee's information last time was the information technology. It was concerned the board, small boards were getting hit pretty hard with these service contracts. And I noticed in their budget that there's been a big phase out of kind of an overfunding, if you will, and there's much more reasonable IS interagency agreement in there now. I think that hopefully helps them operate just as efficiently, more so, but without this extra huge cost. It seemed out of proportion. And just an editorial comment that I think it's pretty good. We have 3,000 licensees, and historically, despite the fact that the population's increased tremendously here in the state of Oregon, we still only have the same average of 12 complaints, and this year only have gotten down to even the violation area, and I think it's the board doing a good job, and perhaps some of my colleagues have managed to do a good job on occasion too. So thank you for the presentation.
Good news from this board.
The a question for either one of you, are you caused many problems by ALF, the Animal Liberation Front, the way you conduct your practices or anything like that? Because, you know, they burn down meat packing plants and horse packing plants, and they release monkeys out at the primate center and all that sort of thing. Do they cause anything to your practitioners?
Mr. Chair, members, that hardly ever comes across our screen, because it's... I think that the only veterinarians that would be involved in that would be research veterinarians.
Okay.
And we don't get complaints about them as much as, I mean, the complaints seem to be about the process or the institution. So the answer is no.
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about that, though. As a large animal practitioner in a farm environment, I'm concerned about veterinarians that are going to be being taken on by these groups of people, or being a veterinarian in a livestock situation. I haven't seen that happen yet, but I'm concerned about it.
Yes, sir. There's a bill in front of the Senate Ag and Natural Resources and Salmon Committee tomorrow, Senate Bill 41, which allows the farming of elk for the first time in Oregon. And you have groups of environmentalists, you know, opposing that because of the farming elk for human consumption rather than allowing to grow naturally for hunters. And so I know we'll hear from them on that part of it, too. Did you have something, Senator Trill?
No.
Okay. Fine. Would Doss please proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Martha McDaniel, Department of Administrative Services. You're being handed the presentation material you're getting very familiar with by now, and I'll go through that briefly. The Veterinary Medical Examining Board budget for proposed budget for governor's budget for 2001-2003 is $436,045. This includes three positions, 2.25 full-time equivalent. This budget is an increase of 2.7% from the 1999-2001 legislative adopted budget, and it's a 2.3% increase from the current service level. This budget is funded 100% by other funds. On page 4, you'll see that this budget continues most operations at the current level. As been talked about a little bit, originally there was a package, there is a package in the governor's budget to add funding for the Attorney General review of the Administrative Rule 875, the Veterinary Practice Act. As been discussed, this will be, the agency is no longer going to be requiring this package, as they are going to be requesting additional limitations for the 1999-2001 budget to pay for this. This was requested last biennium. We had phased it out in a package, CSL package, and then re-requested it, but it will be going away. Another package in this budget adds funding for one board member to participate in two annual conferences, and the third policy package adds funding to update the telephone system and purchase the computer hardware for the investigator. This is a single program unit board. They operate through that one program unit. Their distribution between personal services and service and supply, their personal services at 54% of the budget, and their services and supplies represents 46% of that budget. This agency did not come before the emergency board through April 2000, other than the standard salary adjustment that all of the state agencies presented. And their current service level budget includes the standard adjustments for the government service charges, rents, and the Attorney General adjustments. I've already talked a bit about the packages. Package 291 for $4,000 will no longer be needed. It is included in the governor's budget. Package 292 is for $2,000. That is to allow one board member to attend and participate in two annual conferences of the national organizations representing veterinary and non-veterinary practitioners of alternative or non-traditional methods of animal care. And Package 293, program enhancement for $4,000, is an increase into their service and supply budget to improve staff efficiency and customer service by upgrading the office telephone system and by purchasing a new computer for the agency investigator. As both Rick and Lori have mentioned, the fee changes, there was an increase in the examination fee for the examination agency that provides exams for this agency, but there were temporary decreases on what they're proposing now for 2001-2003 for licenses and waiving of the technician fees. The only technical adjustment to this budget was an increase of $323. This was a result of an error in calculation of risk management charges. So the revised governor's recommended budget is $436,368.
Thank you, Martha. Are there questions for Martha?
No.
If not, is there any other business to come before the board? And Senator Miller, since you're back, we're going to adjourn. And if you would please talk to Senator Cho. This particular budget has $65,000 in AG's fees, and we spent some time on that, but you did a good job of representing your interest, and we are adjourned.
Yeah.